Chapter 28. Wearing his protective biosafety suit, Rossiter stepped out of the lab's primary airlock and disconnected the blue air hose. It hissed until he closed off the valve on the O2 tank. He then draped the hose over the spool fitted to the wall next to it. Also wearing a protective suit with no mask, Bollard, who was wiping down every work surface and keyboard with ammonia and Lysol, watched Rossiter move with urgency across the lab to one of the circular freezers in the center of the room. There was a small keypad next to the biohazard warning on the chamber seal. Rossiter punched in a 7-digit code and the seal snapped open, curls of vapor slithering out over the floor as he twisted the heavy lid off. Inside the sub-zero vat were 5 aluminum test tubes. He carefully pulled out the one labeled Sample 6 and walked it into another airlock where Gibbons stood at a bench next to the electron microscope. "Moment of truth," he said as he delicately opened the tissue culture sample and placed it on the tray. He then turned to the large monitor Gibbons was now sitting in front of, eagerly awaiting the results. Rossiter began. "So, we know that species like yeast, flies, fish, and mice have many genes and molecular pathways in common with humans. Therefore, they are considered model organisms when studying diseases. But seeing as I don't have a live tissue sample of a wraith, the closest I could get in terms of the desired specifications was this." Rossiter clicked his mouse, and under electron microscopy, a blackened cell appeared on the screen. It looked ravaged and destroyed. "This was a bovine kidney cell. The animal had a mineral and bone disorder which caused abnormal hormone levels, which in turn also caused calcium and phosphorus levels to be severely out of balance. If these wraith have similar genetic issues, then this is as close of a replication as we're ever going to get with a live cell." Gibbons nodded earnestly, despite already knowing that. "Run the overnight sequence for me." Rossiter shrunk the live image and clicked his mouse again, bringing up a new video file icon. He double-clicked it. "This is prior to infection." On the screen, a normal bovine cell appeared. Then the cell began to swell until it was completely filled with black spherical structures. "How long?" asked Gibbons. 1 minute after infection. Keep watching." Suddenly, the black spheres thickened, completely overrunning the cell, shattering its outer membrane and rendering it into the smeary globular form that was revealed under the microscope. "That's 3 minutes after infection. Ultimately, it explodes the cell, destroying it completely before moving on to the next one, and then the next, and so forth until there's nothing left to kill."
"Jesus,"
Gibbons whispered to himself, awestruck at the imagery in front of him. He narrowed his eyes and leaned in closer to the window on the screen that showed the destroyed cell under the electron microscope.
"Change magnification on this."
Rossiter flicked a small switch on the microscope's console. On screen, the fuzzy spikes were instantly enhanced and enlarged in real time to become razor-sharp, crystalline structures that looked like huge balls of black steel climbing up the sides of thick pillars.
"Now, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds," quipped Rossiter, quoting the infamous Hindu scripture Oppenheimer once used.
Gibbons turned to Rossiter, struggling to contain his excitement.
"How close do you think you are to your own initial data?"
Looking at the screen, Rossiter breathed out an exhausted sigh and folded his arms.
"Full replication, 95%, maybe. I mean, I'm another week or so away at least, but even if I manage to replicate it entirely, there's still no way of knowing how effective it is."
"Not yet. Trust me, in a few years' time you'll know. We all will."
Rossiter looked down at the floor and said nothing. He was still coming to grips with the whole time travel thing. Gibbons hopped up off his stool and slapped Rossiter on the back.
"Excellent work. Let's get the sample back on ice."
Outside, Bollard stood near the airlock, watching Gibbons and Rossiter intently. Despite being unable to hear them, he knew exactly what phase the replication process was now at. He glanced down at his watch, turning to see Wu coming up alongside him holding his notebook.
"Where's Rhea?"
Bollard asked. Wu slid his notebook onto the nearest workspace and took a seat. Gibbon sent her out to look for Matt. He lifted his screen and brought up his web browser. Who knows where that fucking guy ended up? He hunched over the desk and began working, furiously pounding his keyboard. I just hope he's okay and hasn't done anything stupid. Without saying a word, Bollard turned and quietly walked over to the security console next to the warehouse's entrance and punched in the code, unlocking the steel door automatically. He then walked over to Wu again and turned his back to him. Mind giving me a hand with this suit? Wu stood and began unzipping the back of Bollard's protective suit, frowning upon spotting the bulky straps that were protruding from underneath his t-shirt. Why are you wearing Kevlar? Clang! Suddenly the entire lab went dark, and before Wu could react, thwap! His head disappeared in a puff of ash. His lifeless body already looked like a charred husk before it hit the floor with a heavy thud. Bollard spun around to see Marlowe and three of his men had entered the lab, all dressed in identical black fatigues, Reaper rifle muzzles panning through the shadows, each one glowing molten blue and projecting red laser dots. Bollard simply stepped aside as Marlowe approached, his sights leveled on him. They're in the second airlock. You did well, Asset. Marlowe snorted with a cynical grin. Bollard dropped to one knee and bowed his head. Hail the Combine. Wrong answer. Thwap! Bollard's head split like a cracked egg as Marlowe pumped a plasma round into him and kept on moving through the lab. Bollard collapsed to the floor, limp as a discarded rag doll. Having heard the shots outside, Gibbons and Rossiter were already in survival mode, hiding in the darkness, knees to chest underneath the workbenches. Who are they? Whispered Rossiter, struggling to staunch the flood of panic and terror that was bubbling up inside him. Gibbons knew, but he could not answer him. His mind was still struggling to process what was happening. He had hoped he would get to live out the rest of his days without ever hearing the distinct sound of Wraith weaponry being discharged again. But there it was. That discordant rattlesnake chitter was enough to chill the blood of anyone unfortunate enough to hear it. How could the Wraith be here? He thought. Too many questions with zero time to answer them. The only thing left to do now was making sure they never got hold of the virus sample. He snaked his arm up from underneath the desk and grabbed the aluminum test tube, then ducked back under and pulled Rossiter along by the arm, swishing across the floor on their knees towards the airlock entrance. Keep your head down, Gibbons hissed. He remembered the loaded Glock pistol he kept in the top drawer of his workspace outside, but there was simply no way he was ever going to be able to reach it. Rossiter's breathing was verging on hyperventilation as Gibbons cautiously raised his head and peered through the plexiglass wall to see shadows shifting within shadows, the red lasers sweeping and crisscrossing through the darkened lab. Then they could hear someone stabbing the entry code for the airlock on the keypad outside. With seconds left, Gibbons wheeled to Rossiter and took hold of him by the shoulders. He was trembling and breathless. The usually confident and prudish voice he carried by default was now sputtering and frail. Listen to me. If they capture you, don't ever let them turn you. Remember the good work you've done here. What is this? What's going on? Rossiter was an addled mess, but he would never get the answers he sought from Gibbons. He watched, eyes agog, as a pencil-thin laser beam silently drifted up Gibbons's chest, settling at the center of his forehead. Gibbons kept his eyes on Rossiter. Thank you. For everything. Rossiter never even heard the shot. He just sat there in stunned shock, ears ringing, his face a crimson mask of flecked blood.